cliffcentral.com. Ah, yes, good morning, everybody. It is a beautiful Thursday. You are here with us. How could your life possibly be bad? I mean, that's very egotistical because how could I make it good? But, you know, the fact is we are stronger together. That is the truth, right? Isn't that the truth?
That sounds like a manifesto.
It does a little writing. Bit. It does. Well, if you want to talk about manifestos, you better join us for the second hour of today when we do the Burning Platform. We'll talk a little bit about Herman Mashaba's party.
Oh, man.
You know, we've I've gone from like thinking Herman Mashaba was in some way the solution to some of our problems, not only in Joburg, but in the country, to thinking the guy really doesn't know what he's doing in politics, to feeling like at least he's doing something, because so many people sit and talk, including me, and we're like, yeah, well, this is rubbish, that's bad, this is good, this is better, this is maybe a nice idea, and here's a guy who's getting his hands dirty. So I do think at some point in the next week or two, we've got to try and get him in here and talk to him and see what he's got on the agenda and who he's trying to win over, you know. In this country, everything is all about like rich and poor and black and white and employed and unemployed.
Bless
people
you.
Who sneeze. People who don't. And just maybe it's time for people to stop categorizing each other like that. Just maybe we've got to stop being so myopic, and we've got to see the reasons to lump people together rather than to separate them out, because I think the last couple of years have proven one thing, if nothing else, that cutting people up into groups that don't make sense has ended up hurting political parties, and political parties are not the best way of doing anything anyway. And maybe, just maybe, there's a guy like Herman who sees a different path. So let's open ourselves up to it. I don't know. Maybe he's got a point.
The funny thing is, why are we the first to realize this before political parties themselves realize
because
this?
Because political parties are resistant to change.
They are.
They've got to hold on to what they've got.
Mm.
They're too afraid. You know, there's this, not just one survey, but they've done so many different research papers over the years about how it feels worse to lose something that you have than it feels good to gain something you didn't. In other words, if you lose 10,000 rand, it gets stolen out of your bank account.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I guess it means more because you had it.
That feels like a greater pain than if you win the lottery this weekend.
Wow.
Yes. In other words, the euphoria you're going to get, the upswing of winning the lottery, is going to feel great, don't get me wrong, but it isn't going to hit you as hard in terms of your emotional ups and downs as the losing of the 10 grand, even if both happen in the same week. Yeah. So there's something to think about. And political parties are designed to be entropic. In other words, they prefer not to lose people than they are willing to risk things to gain. Makes sense?
Yeah, but it's also not our problem to have to dissect them like this.
You're right. And a lot of people have fallen out of love with the whole idea of political parties, right? Which is why, as I said to that friend of mine who's in the ANC not so long ago, what they don't realize is that by far the majority of people in this country have given up on democracy, they've given up on political parties, and they've given up on all the things that those parties hold, all of them, because collectively they have a general idea. Whether they admit it or not, that idea is like, we all got to try and get along. None of them are like pro-war. None of them are like, let's just join up with whoever and wherever and whenever. Let's abandon money. None of them are saying that.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall at their head offices. Like to go to Bruma for the DA.
Yeah. Is that where they are?
That's where they are. Did you know?
Bruma.
Of all places.
Like, no wonder they're screwed. Rumor. What are they in the flea market? Do they have a stand? Is that where they meet? Selling stuff next to some Chinese immigrant?
No, if they were doing that, they would have shoved it in our faces already about how they said
look how diverse.
Yes. I'd like to be at Luthuli House to really just be a fly on the wall for a day to see how things are truly run.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it would be that interesting. I really don't. And also, remember, if you're a fly on the wall, you have to be invisible because they're not going to be themselves around you if they know you're observing them.
I know of two people, and I don't know them personally, but I just know of them, who have worked in the private sector for years, and both have recently decided to go into politics to hopefully make a difference, as in actually, and they both have coincidentally gone in to work for the ANC because they say, you know what, we're done complaining from the outside.
Yeah,
perhaps
we're going to make a difference.
If we work from the inside, things will change. And I go, okay. The same way I'm like, yeah, let's not complain then. I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah, I've toyed with that
let's
idea.
See.
Like there was a time in my 30s where I thought, the best way for me to make a positive contribution to this country is actually to join the ANC and to do things inside.
Ooh.
And I've weighed it up with all the seriousness you can possibly imagine because I thought this is the party that's definitely going to be in power for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So how else would I make a difference? I don't believe in any of these political parties. I've never been a member of any of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you count when I was at varsity and I joined all the political parties, so I could get free stuff,
and like
just
t-shirts.
And really, well, just to fuck with them, really, because they were all set up on the campus together in like this main area, and I just went. I honestly went from one tent to the other, getting a pen or a t-shirt, and then I would go to the next one with that stuff, and they'd say, "Hey, but you've already joined that one." I'd go, "Yeah, I'm joining yours as well."
Yeah,
they didn't like that.
Gareth, I think, like you said, they have nothing left to galvanize because, like you said, before it was war or those people are poor and we're rich. It's like real politics is really, really boring, actually, because it's really mundane. They don't want to do all that stuff.
Right.
And they're doing what they call, and I think we've spoken about it before, so I don't want to go on about it, like Hellenic politics, right? We don't have to do that anymore.
You have a term of the day, by the way. I have to point that out.
Yeah, he does. And a hatred of the day.
Every single
day. He has a term each day and a hatred every day.
Yeah, right. You use the term, well, you know, they call it at least once.
Well, they do. That's what it's called.
Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just observing. Sorry, as you were.
Yeah, Gareth, you know only too well. As most people who like history, well, you people would sit on the Acropolis and do that type of... Like, that's dead because you look at the most successful way of running anything today.
Yeah.
It's small, tight, efficient companies. They're killing everyone. Amazon is run. There's no fat at Amazon. That's why they're the
successful. It's hardly small, though.
Well, I mean, you look at the people that run it, though. I mean, from what I understand,
it doesn't require the kind of workforce that General Electric did in the 50s or 60s.
And now you've still got these inflated government sectors.
No.
You can't have efficiency.
No, well, we know this. You're absolutely right. No one's going to argue with you anymore.
And democracy is dead, I'm afraid.
Well, you know, the good news is that even if we didn't improve under any of these political parties, and it looks like none of them have a plan to make things better. That's not an unfair statement to make. None of them have a manifesto that's got any real original ideas in it. I don't believe so anyway. They're all still fighting with ghosts from the apartheid era. But even if they don't have a good idea, even if we stay where we are increasing our abilities, our possibilities, our opportunities, our collective good, just because we belong to a world where those things are inexorable. They're just moving forward anyway, with or without the political party's consent. Which is why when people talk about imminent collapse and South Africa's a disaster and there's just no investment potential and all that stuff, I say, yeah, not really, hey. It's still better than 1988, 1998, 2008, and 2018. Right now is still better than all of those years. And don't deny it because you just sound like you're ignorant of history. You really are. You may be able to say, well, the stock market was better here or the currency was better there. But those things are not indications of general upward potential. They're very specific to a specific part of the economy or society. So don't give me that. And I'm afraid if you want a historian and you haven't read enough books, it's easy to jump to those conclusions. You're like, well, there are more poor people now than there ever. No, they're not. They're really not. And they're not as poor as they were 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 20 years ago. They're just not. It's just not true. Obesity is a bigger problem than starvation.
Mm.
You know, I keep referring to things like that. And then people go, but we have poverty. And I'm like, yes, and unemployment and all of those things. But it's still not as bad. So stop it. Stop digging yourself a hole and being pessimistic. And of all people to lead us into a world of optimism, does it have to be Donald Trump? I'm afraid it might have to, because he's such a nutcase. He's so different to everyone else. If anyone who was polite and polished, like Obama, said these things, I don't think people would be listening, because they're sick of politicians. So you needed a non-politician to tell you that. And if it's going to be him versus, you know, all these people pleading that the earth is spiraling out of control, we're all about to die, things are terrible, and he's like giving at the world, just go and listen to his speech at the World Economic Forum. I know you don't like Trump, maybe. Maybe you don't even like America. Maybe you hate those places and that man. Maybe you hate them. I'm totally willing to accept that. My love or no love for him is completely immaterial. Who cares what I think? Listen to what he says about the numbers. Just the numbers. And you can fact check them if you don't believe him, because a lot of what he says is bullshit. But go and fact check him. Or if you don't want to listen to him, just listen to Klaus, what's his name, the guy from the Global Economic Forum. Just listen to his intro. It is absolutely undeniable that things are on the up in America. In every which way, that country is getting better and better. And listen to why. And if you don't like the reasons, put that aside. Because your likes and dislikes and your beliefs and your non-beliefs are totally irrelevant, just like mine are. Look at the numbers. And it'll give you reason to smile this morning.
Yep.
Rather than to frown. Well, because when America does well, guess what? The rest of us do well too. Yeah. As Anthea Gardner always says, a rising tide floats all boats.
Before he was sidelined, now his name skips my mind. Louis C.K., that's it. Louis C.K. does an awesome skit around why living right now is the best time. He goes to set the scene around, like, if they really do crack this whole concoction of creating a time capsule and how to... Not a time capsule, man. To time a time capsule. Machine. There we go. He's not interested at all, because he's like, why do I want to leave now? Why do I want to go back?
No. I wouldn't want to live any other time. Oh, and I did. There was some sad news from yesterday, which is worth, I think, reflecting on. Well, I think it's sad because I'm just a devotee of these people. If there was ever, you know who I'm going to talk about?
You're going to say Monty Python.
Monty Python. I'm if there crushed. Was ever. An influence on my childhood. It wasn't Jesus Christ or my teachers. It was these five men who had some kind of creative genius mixed with a wacky sense of humor that just appealed to millions of people all over the world. And I'm very, very sad this morning to give you the news, if you haven't heard already, that Terry Jones, who was one of the Pythons, you know, it's Terry Jones, Terry Gilliam, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, John Cleese, and I said five, but there were six, and Graham Chapman. Graham Chapman was the first to go. Now there are four left, because Terry Jones is the next one to go. And these guys had the greatest sense of humor about Graham Chapman's death. They would go on shows after he died with an urn with his ashes on.
Stop.
And put him on the table while they were all there. And then they'd knock it over and... his ashes would go around. They go, oh, fuck, we've spilt his ashes. And they just treat him with total disrespect as a dead person. So they'll do the same with Terry Jones. So don't sit there and cry, because they wouldn't like it. In fact, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad, right? So this is for anybody who's feeling sad about that.
Just make you swear and curse.
Tell us, Eric.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble. Give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
Be optimistic, right?
always look on the light side of life.
Right, because who has ever made anything successful?
If life seems jolly rotten,
started something new,
you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile.
Changed the world in a better way.
When you're feeling in the dumps.
That was pessimistic. No one.
Just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word.
Yes.
You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene. Give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance
anyhow.
Right.
So always look on the bright side of death.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, death.
I wasn't expecting that.
Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit.
Right.
When you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the...
And you know how it goes from there. But it is true, like, negative and pessimistic people are only ever good at keeping things the way they are or taking them backwards. If you're going to be optimistic, suddenly things start getting better in other places. And you've got to develop a little bit of confidence, and maybe you get one or two lucky breaks, and before you know it, things are good.
Absolutely. And that's on Gareth.
It sounds impossible because people start the year and they're like, oh my God, I got no money. Start the year and you're like, oh, people are not, they're not awake yet. They're not doing business. They're still in holiday mode. Don't panic. You going to say that song?
I was going to say, I mean, appropriate for two reasons. Probably Python, in my opinion, the Python's greatest work, a film that was made illegal around the world, Life of Brian.
And it was directed by Terry Jones, who died yesterday.
And then he played an incredible role because he was Brian's mother. And if you can go and Google just the clip of Terry Jones screaming at a crowd, telling everyone that he's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. Uh-huh. It sort of encapsulates this great man. And they talk about him as the best actor of all the... They all say Terry Jones is the best actor, the best genuine actor. So if you haven't seen Life of Brian, do yourself a favor.
Well, it's a great, great movie.
Now, you listen here. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Now, go away.
Who are you?
I'm his mother, that's who.
Behold his mother. Behold his mother.
Absolutely
beautiful. Brilliant. What a beautiful old woman he made as well. Hideous. Fucking ugly. Yeah, wow, a couple
he was
of roles.
77.
Yeah, it's not even that old.
Not at all.
But, and it's actually quite, well, it's quite dignified that it wasn't mentioned to the press up until yesterday, but he died on Saturday evening.
Oh, okay. See, you can get away with not having to put out the news immediately.
He died on Saturday evening with his wife by his side. That's what the family has said in a statement. And in recent years, he was suffering from a progressive aphasia, a rare form of dementia that affects speech.
Oh, no. That's an awful way to go.
And especially for someone like him.
Oh! I'm sorry, Mandy Bryan's mother!
Always look on the bright side of death.
There we go.
Just before you draw your terminal.
I love those guys. I used to have the first Monty Python's previous record is what it was called. And it had a picture of an arm going around and around the record, chasing a butterfly with six tits.
You mean like a physical...
No, not an actual arm. No, it was just
painted. No, like a physical record.
Yeah, like a record, a vinyl.
A vinyl, that's
it. My parents owned it, and... this was one of my favorite things. I would just sit there and listen to it over and over again. The story of Happy Valley. If I ever fell in love with audio, it was then. I wasn't listening to radio.
The Flying Circus is still unbeaten.
Oh, man.
It's still unmatched to this day.
I have four books at home with all the scripts from the Flying Circus in them.
Incredible.
That's how much I love these guys.
Ugh. I had the full box set, Gareth.
Did?
And I still have it. It's one of my greatest assets.
I don't believe you!
I digitized it. You bastard! Vicious, artless bastard.
Hey, Gareth. 1998 was better for three reasons. This is from Jason. He says... One, okay. No social media. Mm-hmm. Two, no social media. Three, no social media. It is a cancer of modern society. I don't know, dude. I am so torn between them. I'm exactly halfway on that thing because I hate social media as much as you clearly do. But just think about how much great interaction you have with friends on a WhatsApp group.
Yeah, and Jason, you now don't have to call that random aunt of yours who you avoid all the time. You just write on a Facebook page for a birthday.
Happy birthday,
and
aunt.
That's it.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gertrude.
Right. I mean, I think of my WhatsApp groups now as being as important to me as the actual physical interactions we have together. And it makes it much more fun when you do have those dinners or whatever it is together because you've got a history that is actually documented. Mm-hmm. And you've been joking about things and there's been ongoing stories and, you know, that kind of thing. So suddenly when you see each other, it's that much more fulfilling and you're like, ha, 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 look, there's this one. He was doing stupid stuff last week or whatever it might be.
But I hate to tell him this bad information with no due respect. Social media is amoral. It's when you use it to attack other people or you go and seek affirmation from it, of course... It's like saying, oh, cars are bad because they emit things. No, well, they also help us to get somewhere. So, you know, give and take, son.
Thank you very much. Amoral, not immoral. Morning, your Life of Brian was so ahead of its time. The I want to be a woman scene. And also the what have the Romans ever done for us? Think of Helen's remarks in Singapore. It's so ahead of their time.
The aqueduct?
Yeah, I know. It's just beautiful. I think every kid in the world should have to watch Life of Brian at least three times in order to... Before they choose a religion, before they back a politician, before they read any complicated philosophy on politics, they should have to watch Life of Brian. It just takes everything and makes it sound ridiculous. Because humans are ridiculous. Mm. And Sia, he was a legend. They all were. Thank you so much for bringing up, I think, the way he died, I suppose.
Oh,
What you told about the story of the last couple of weeks of his life. True G, I try to cut negative people out of my life. And by the way, this comes from Vessel. Says, I try to cut negative people out. What a bum to have them around you. They have such bad attitudes, it affects you, and all around you tends to be shit. Peace and love, peace and love. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Morning, guys. In the sport, Man United lost 2-0 to Burnley at Old Trafford. And this is especially funny after Mbulela was giving so much shit to Gord yesterday. And I loved it because usually Gord just steamrolls right over people. And Mbulela made it very difficult for Gord to evade capture.
It's just everywhere right now, even on Twitter. Out of the 10 top trending topics, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 have to do with this match. This is when I knew it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know what was happening in the 90 minutes. I don't know who kicked what, when, and how, but clearly it's a big deal.
Listen, it's like your cousin starting a company today and it becomes bigger than Amazon tomorrow. That's how catastrophic this thing is.
You know, Mbulela, I appreciate your analogies.
Yeah.
Because then they paint the picture. Okay, that's how big it is.
Burnley beating Man United is that ridiculous, yeah.
All right. By the way, we had Nikki and Leanne van der Velden here the other day with their Swiss CBD oil.
Yeah.
And I've subsequently discovered there are like 100 little startups across South Africa that are all doing CBD oil. It's become the new gold.
Yeah. Where have you been?
No, I know. But this is when this thing started, 5 years ago, maybe? I wish I'd been quick enough to have started my own. Shit.
Cliff Central CBD.
No, I mean, yes. How dumb am I?
Damn it, we could have trademarked that.
Don't you hate it when you miss a trend?
Yeah.
Especially when you miss something that could have made you some money or that you could have been the first to do because you thought at the time, this is a great idea, and you didn't grab it.
Mm-hmm.
God, I hate that. Mike Tyson did. That's the FOMO, I guess.
That's true FOMO.
Yeah, Mike Tyson did exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at this whole CBD wave as Pilates was, craft beer was, gin was, Tybo with Billy Banks.
What yeah, is I remember that. That?
Yeah. Oh, he was, never mind. He was part of my sexual awakening.
He was? You were into him? You have such weird taste.
I wouldn't say I was into him, but I just remember those infomercials. Taste. There was Isabella Jones on Very Mark.
Isabel Jones? Yes. Was she also part of your sexual awakening?
then it would be Billy Banks.
Isabel Jones was part of your sexual awakening. That would have been exciting. Full spectrum.
Then Billy Banks would
come on. A lot of people don't know this, but Isabel Jones was actually Terry Jones from Monty Python's sister. No. I'm kidding, but that would be... That would be so funny if it was true.
And you know, he'd be selling us Tybo, and I'd go, I'd want to learn that from you.
Really?
Goodness me.
Let's talk about the weather. Goodness Let's move me. On.
All right. It's almost time for the five things you need to know. Don't forget, we've got Canton popping by for the Burning Platform a little later on. And if there's something you want us to discuss, you can let us know. Just message us on 079-748-2090. Yes. Very good. Quick thing that I thought might be interesting to reflect on this morning. Google has published the largest ever high-resolution map of brain connectivity. It took a fruit fly brain, but it's really interesting to see. They've mapped what the neural pathways are that are taken when a fly makes decisions, moves around, does certain things, looks for food, whatever it's doing, and they've actually mapped the entire fruit fly's brain.
Wow.
That is incredible.
It is incredible, and it shows you that with machine learning and the ability for huge processing power, we are now able finally to start grasping, even if it's just the first attempt, how the brains of various animals work. Fruit fly is not a bad place to start. Won't be long, because these things improve exponentially, not incrementally. Won't be long before we have a map of how people think, which routes and circuits are engaged when people feel, when people taste, when people smell, when people see, when people hear, and also how we control different parts of our body in terms of motor neurons being fired off, how exactly different parts of the brain communicate with each other, how we experience things like balance, how we experience things like space and time, and then we're going to see some really interesting stuff happen. A lot of people are very paranoid about this, but I'm excited as hell.
Well, I think rightfully so. You know, just even mentioning dementia a little while ago, and also something like Parkinson's. Did you hear that Ozzy Osbourne has been diagnosed with Parkinson's?
No, he had it years. Come on. Did you ever watch The Osbournes? That was the first reality show.
I wasn't trying to laugh, actually.
Ozzy's been crazy since the 90s. What are you talking about?
So,
Sharon, there you go. I'm just tell you, we'll put this down somewhere.
Please don't put crazy and Parkinson's in the same group.
Who took more drugs, Whitney Houston?
What I'm saying is his brain has never been really optimal, you know.
No.
Well, something like this will help. If we can map how the brain works, then, you know, that'll be good.
Yeah.
Hey, Gareth, who do you think took more drugs, him or Whitney Houston?
I don't even think Ozzy was that much of a drug. Yes, he took drugs, but I mean, can't blame biting the head of a bird.
I think he was more judicious. Look, he had, instead of having an enabler in Sharon, he had someone to actually control him and marshal him and bring out the best in him. Like, she was actually a bit of a caretaker stroke manager, whereas Bobby Brown was an enabler.
Bobby!
Where Bobby made Whitney worse, Sharon made Ozzy better.
Okay.
So that's the external influence in terms of being just hedonistic and what I think they're probably equal.
Yeah.
I think Ozzy's had more fun than Whitney had and better relationships. And he's probably had more meaning in his life and more happiness and more success. Yeah. I think Whitney was a miserable person and it was
very sad. Yeah.
Yeah. She was horribly unhappy. And when I think about Whitney Houston with all that talent, Jesus.
Over the December break, I got into one of those YouTube rabbit holes where I ended up discovering the whole season of Being Bobby Brown is available on YouTube. And this was probably one of the worst decisions made in human history for that show to be commissioned. But they were just a train wreck couple. So to watch that, like, I remember one scene in particular, they're going through the airport, they shut down the whole airport, they're like waiting for their flight, they're singing, they're clearly high.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they were bad for each other. Yeah, really bad.
Okay, let's get into the five things you need to know this morning. Here are the stories that everybody's going to be talking about, and if you don't know about them, you're going to sound like you're not paying attention. 14 people were injured after a ceiling collapsed at a Bloemfontein mall. Central Park Shopping Center in Bloemfontein on Wednesday. 13 minor injuries, one moderate injury with an ankle fracture. So actually, it seems that most people got away with very little to worry about. The victims have been transported to the Pelonomi Hospital for treatment. The Mangaung Metropolitan Municipality said that when the city's planning directorate visited the mall, a portion of the ceiling was found to have collapsed. On arrival at the scene, it was confirmed only a portion of the chipboard ceiling had collapsed. The city's inspector issued a notice to Brawl, who are the property owners, to investigate the cause of the collapse and say that they're going to remedy the situation. Apparently, the city's planning team would wait for a report from... You see, all these... These are the bureaucracies. Now, it could just have been an accident. I don't think that this mall was built to collapse on people.
Mm.
I'm sure that no property owner wants that to happen. So it's an accident. But listen to how many people have to be involved. So we've got Brawl, who are the property owners. Then we've got the city's planning team. They're going to wait for a report from a qualified structural engineer. And then they're going to get another company in to fix this. So, you know... Like, instead of just, if a piece of our ceiling here collapsed, then I would phone Devesh. I'd say, Devesh, we need to fix the ceiling. Devesh would come in with probably, I don't know, maybe two people. Maybe they'd fix it. Jane would shout and scream.
I was about to say, there'd be grumpy people coming to
work. You have to get, the minute you have to get, like, the local government and the city planning team, and, oh, please, save yourself the trouble.
It's just the red tape and the procedure.
Exactly.
But I was thinking, as you were relaying that, if I was involved in this, I would want all of that procedure. If I was one of the people and a roof... fell on me.
Okay,
I wouldn't just wake up, dust myself off, and go,
it's not
okay,
it's like
fine.
Some of the chipboard ceiling fell on people. Okay. So not like the whole fucking mall fell in and everyone was crushed to death.
But let's talk about this. It falls on my 55-inch HD screen. Do I get a refund?
Probably.
Your HD screen more valuable to you than your own body?
Yeah, for Mbulelo it is.
Is that what you're saying?
Please, what do you expect me to watch? Standard definition football? Are you mad?
Watch with what when your brain is half gone, when half the roof falls on.
All right, listen to this. Zimbabwe's doctors have ended their strike after a billionaire made an offer to sort some of their problems out. The strike over pay and poor conditions lasted for more than 4 months, paralyzing the country's healthcare sector. Last year, Zimbabwean telecoms billionaire Strive Masiyiwa tabled an offer to break the impasse. He said he would set up $100 million Zimbabwean dollar fund. Is that a lot of money?
Let's see.
He said this fund would pay up to 2,000 doctors a subsistence allowance of about $300 a month to help them with transport and living costs. Now,
let's just note, private sector.
Yeah, I know. Always the private sector. He's a private citizen. He lives in the UK, by the way. He's not even involved in Zim. But he said he'll fund the doctors for 6 months through a fellowship program run by his Higher Life Foundation. What happens after that is not clear. In a statement, the Zimbabwean Hospital Doctors Association confirmed Mr. Masiyiwa's offer had been accepted. In the light of recent development, the ZHDA wants to extend its gratitude to the foundation and to Strive. The ZHDA is encouraging its entire membership to go and apply for the training fellowship before the stipulated deadline. Senior and junior doctors have agreed to go back to work as part of the same deal. Most of the striking doctors were earning less than $100 a month, leaving them struggling to buy food or get work. They're demanding salary increases pegged to the US dollar to cope with triple-digit inflation stoked by Zimbabwe's collapsed economy.
Less than $100?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Zimbabwean government has said it cannot afford the increased salaries. It is yet to comment on Mr. Who cares about Zimbabwe's government's comment on Mr. Masiyiwa's offer.
No
one gives a shit what they think. I'm not asking the person who's standing on the street corner what they think of a donation, a charitable donation that's been made by a Jeff Bezos, am I?
No.
Who cares what that person thinks? And then, of course, they always throw this in. Founder of the phone network Econet Wireless, he's thought to have a net worth of $1.1 billion, according to Forbes.
Good for him?
Yes, of course, but you know why they put that in there.
Pure
resentment and bitterness and jealousy.
So, yeah, it doesn't matter what, how
Let's
rich
show
he is.
How rich he is. Because then maybe we can also infer that he could give more.
You said he donated 100 million Zimbabwean dollars.
I think they meant US dollars, because 100 million Zimbabwean dollars wouldn't go very far.
Because 100 million Zimbabwean dollars is about 3.9 million South African rands.
Oh, no.
Sure.
Can't even get a nice car for that. No,
well. But I mean, if doctors are earning less than 100 US dollars, that's like 1,600 rands.
And then, as we mentioned, Monty Python stars have led the tributes to their co-star Terry Jones, who died at the age of 77. The Welsh actor and writer played a variety of characters in the iconic comedy group's Flying Circus TV series and directed several of their films. He died on Tuesday. Well, this says he died on Tuesday. Sia told us that he might have died on Saturday, so it seems like there are two conflicting reports there. 4 years after contracting a rare form of dementia known as FTD, David Walliams and Simon Pegg were among other comedians who remembered him. Fellow Monty Python star Michael Palin, who's now Sir Michael Palin, described Jones as one of the funniest writer-performers of his generation. I love that. You're just described as one of the funniest. That's good enough for me. I love that description. You know how I rate funny. I rate funny way more than I do great military general or political strategist or successful billionaire. Funny.
Some people can rate funny higher than looks.
I do.
Well, it's one of the rarest things in the world. For somebody to be genuinely funny is so rare. There are so few people that are actually incredibly funny, these guys. And then to be able to present funny, that puts you in a different stratosphere.
One could never hope for a better friend, said Michael Palin. He added, Terry was one of my dearest, closest, most valued friends. He was kind, generous, supportive, and passionate about living life to the full. He was far more than one of the funniest writer-performers of his generation. He was the complete Renaissance comedian, writer, director, presenter, historian, brilliant children's author, and the warmest, most wonderful company you could wish to have. Stephen Fry said, farewell, Terry Jones. The great foot has come down to stamp on you. That was part of the opening titles of almost every Monty Python thing. My God, what pleasure you gave. What untrammeled joy and delight. What a wonderful talent, heart, and mind. Russell Brand said, may the dear great Terry Jones find eternal peace in the loving embrace of Jesus Christ. Or more likely, Brian. Oh, wow. All right. So there we go. That's all you need to know. If you want to look for tributes, there are going to be a bunch of those online from people who appreciate good humor through the course of the day today. Those are the five things you need to know this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's good enough for me if it's good enough for you. It's good enough for me. It's good enough for you.
Is that a song? I don't know.
All right. Talking about being immortal. Oh, people love this. Always comes up, right? It's regularly on the show, part of every week's discussion. Grant says, I'd like the body of a 16-year-old, the mind of a 40-year-old. I'd like to have the rock-hard cock of and know how to use it. That's Grant in Nelspruit.
Solid. A solid Grant.
Biggest Aussie fan ever. This is from Sean. He says, before the TV show, obviously, Aussie did a lot of drugs, but he was always more of an alcoholic than a drug addict.
Ah.
Oh, so there's another reason to bind us to Aussie forevermore. Good old alcoholic. All right, I got an email from Jasmine. Do you want to hear from Jasmine?
Let's hear it.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the great show. Your podcasts are my form of daily entertainment and the only way to keep up to date with SA news. Michael Caine's recitation of If is great. I've just covered that poem with my year 11s. Yes, it's still in the curriculum. And it's too good not to share it with them. That's interesting, because I've heard people criticize If. Someone said that he wrote that for, supposedly, one of the generals here in South Africa. It could have been...
Oh.
Yeah. Well, during the Anglo-Boer War, I can't remember, but if you want to look it up, maybe you can find the historical context. I don't know. I just remember learning it off by heart at primary school with a teacher of ours who was absolutely hell-bent on the fact that we should be able to recite things like If because we were morons, and at least if we knew those kinds of things, we could pass by in polite conversation as not being a complete ignoramus. That's what he told us. He said, you're all idiots, and if you guys can learn if by Rudyard Kipling, people will think more of you than you deserve rather than less of you. Which I thought was brilliant advice.
No, who was that teacher?
So Mr. Peter Liddell.
He was excellent. More what people need to hear that they're idiots, including myself, more often.
Yeah, we all need to be realistic. You know, otherwise you have unrealistic expectations. While Sia was listening to Oprah say, you are already the best you. You just do your best and it's good enough.
Uh-huh.
You can change the world. I believe I can fly.
And talking about the right bra size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very important.
Eating grapes with Gail.
Yeah, there we go. So here, let's go back to Jasmine's email. She says, have you guys seen the new season of Sex Education on Netflix? We have to talk about this.
No, I haven't.
I haven't either, but people are posting like little clips of it on all over social media, and it's to me it seems very interesting. I think I've got to watch it. So apparently, if Sia and Mbulela were to have a love child, the character of Eric would be the result. Sia for his wit and drama, and Mbulela for his loud dress sense. Anyway, I've decided that when I get tired of teaching, I'm going to become a traditional wife. The whole traditional wife movement reminds me of the police at Maponya's funeral, because I'm not sure if it's left or right. Your thoughts? Thanks again for giving me and everyone else who lives abroad a platform through which I can connect to my home country. Have a beautiful week. Peace and love, Jasmine. Peace and love. Peace and love.
Brilliant.
I don't know about this traditional wife movement. Trad wife. Mm-hmm. Hashtag trad wife. I would imagine it's just being able to not have to take up the cause of feminists or people who believe that all women should be equal and doing the same stuff that men are doing. If you want to be a wife and a mother, I mean, we need those people in the world.
Mm. Well, I'm surprised that it's like they're making it sound like a fad, but it's been going on for
years. It's not a fad. Yeah. It's the very basis of civilization. Mm. It's not to be scoffed at. If traditional wives are regarded as being backward and unimportant to civilization, then we're in for a hiding. Because if kids don't have a mother in their lives, quite apart from the fact that already not having a father is an issue for so many people, if we don't have mothers, we don't have wives, we don't have people who can create security and a home and nurturing around us, we are in big shit. Doesn't matter how high powered and independent and self-sustaining and financially successful a woman is, if there is no one to raise the child, then that next generation is screwed.
Well, it reminds me of a new South African reality show that's getting a lot of backlash. And look, I'm all for mindless television and just watching something for the sake of entertainment, but even I have only watched two episodes of this first season so far, and it's cringeworthy.
Oh yeah?
It's called Mnakwethu, and the basis of the series is a married man confronts his wife on camera to let her know that he is taking a second wife. I don't think something like that should be on television. And you see the wife properly like have to sink into the shadows and go, okay, sure. If you want to take a second wife, let it be. And the camera follows the second wife come into the family home as well, and the interaction between them. And it's a marvel how something like this is still going on. It's still happening. And I've just been monitoring the conversation online. A lot of people going like this, I would never be able to accept something like this.
I think this is also where, you know, we have people in the world who are in two camps. They're the cultural relativists who will say all cultures are equal. It's about diversity. We must accept everything. So something like polygamy would fit into a diversity of cultures. And why not be tolerant of it? Mm. And then there are people who are going to say, absolutely not. Some cultures are better than others. Polygamy is an outdated and backward institution. It objectifies and second classes women and shouldn't be acceptable in a modern society. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide which one you belong to, because you can't be in the middle on that. You either are pro-modernity and women's rights and anti-polygamy, or you're pro-polygamy, pro-multiculturalism, pro-diversity of different living arrangements. And then you have to decide on the basis of an individual whether or not it's going to work or not.
But can you not be in within a modern setup and be polygamous or polyamorous, which is
you could try, but there's
polyamory is a very real thing.
Sure, but there's something about a man and three women who live as his wives that necessitates hierarchy of some kind.
But we're talking as though matriarchs have never existed.
There are matriarchs.
And it's even within African culture.
Absolutely, but it's rare.
Fair enough.
So if you're going to bring that one up, it's again not a question of apples and apples. Sure. It's a question of apples and pears.
So, but now,
what do you think?
You've watched
the show.
I have questions. Is his first wife like he came with her from KwaMashu and now some weave wearing Santon girl is the new wife? Or how? What's the setup? Is it two traditional women and then the second one now?
It varies from what I've seen over the entire season. But I just think, and it's more, the reason why it makes me cringe is, firstly, I think this is way too much of a personal conversation to be had on television. Secondly, it just seems like an ambush. The wife never knows. So she is filmed at first. She's talking about how much she loves her husband and how great their relationship is. So I think they're almost told we're interviewing you for a show about love. And then out of nowhere, the husband rocks up with another woman and says, oh, by the way, this is going to be your second wife. It is horrible, 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 horrible. And it's sad, in my opinion, that a lot of these wives are accepting it, because I think this is not how someone should be living. It's like this whole trad wife thing. Just Googling it, seeing how one woman is saying, I want to submit to my husband like it's 1959. excuse me.
Look, for me, I don't know why we need such a clear dichotomy between the two. Being a traditional wife is not a sin. Being a career woman is not a sin, as long as you don't make the other one feel like they are wrong. If you're traditional, you're losing for women. If you continue to work, you're losing for women. That's a mad position. That I can't tolerate. Mm. like it's so there's something called Cartesian thinking.
And you see the term you use.
There we go.
We're going down the
Mbulelo rabbit hole.
This is the worst kind of Cartesian thinking. So this guy René Descartes, right? You know him.
No, I don't.
French philosopher.
French philosopher.
I haven't seen him at my local pub.
He hasn't come up.
Give me more. Come on.
Go on.
Famous for cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. So, yeah, you may have heard that before. Okay. Anyway, so in Cartesian thinking, he proposed in his time, and it's not that long ago, that women lacked the intelligence to transcend any sort of trauma. And this was seen as like high thinking, was they could only experience their trauma, but they couldn't ever process it and get over it. And this is
I think 3, 4, 5 I'm just counting the feminist heads exploding.
Yeah, but this
did
is
you even, did you even bringing up René Descartes?
Yeah, well, this was not, and it's not that long ago. So anyway, this is we're recreating Cartesian thinking of women can only be this thing and not evolve to another thing. Like, get over it. Just let's move on.
I love that you just brought that up, because there are so many people who do, you know, they don't know that this is how people thought. That was like ahead of its time, and people were actually incorporating that into the way that they dealt with patients, the way that they employed people. They're like, women, they can experience trauma, but they don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah. And men, of course, would experience it. And that's not that long ago. Descartes is not that long ago. So
I can imagine.
This is a recreation.
Imagine you said that to your girlfriend or your wife now. You would have World War III on your hands.
Gracious me.
Anyway. Imagine all those like angry women with like really big hair that are at universities across South Africa today. Imagine you said to them, go and read some René Descartes. Shat themselves. Oh my God. All right. Chris from Hillcrest says, thanks for starting what you started 5 years ago, blah, blah, blah. Thank you. Okay, now he's just saying thanks. He finds us entertaining and sometimes educated. Sometimes. As a working mom of two busy kids, running home, making dinner, shopping, etc., and having to talk to and occupy my husband, I can 100% understand the appeal of a sister wives setup. I want another wife for Christmas.
There you have it.
Wow.
Okay. You have it.
That's what? From Morgan. She says, bring in another wife. I can't do it all on my own.
Yeah.
Morgan.
Yes. It's 2020, guys.
I think I should introduce my girlfriend to Descartes on the back of that. Yes, do it.
Go Morgan, on. A whole other person is different. Also, another skit that I love, Wanda Sykes, because she just says the world would be easier if women had detachable vaginas. That would be different. You're like, leave it with the husband, let me go out and do it.
Here's something interesting. It comes from a book of poems that someone sent me. Virgins indulge in sex for curiosity, harlots for money, widows for remembering the good old days, wives out of a sense of duty, while the pure pleasure of sex is possible only in adultery.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Try that one.
I'm not putting that on a t-shirt.
Thank you, Puso, for sending that to us.
Puso, you're a genius.
How do you like that?
I love it. I don't like it, I love it.
That's not going to make people happy either. Sure.
Please read it for your significant other in a relationship. Try and see how well that goes down.
Lots of people who are commenting on what Bulelo brought up there about French philosophy around women. Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm looking for trouble. Okay, it's 7 minutes to go until 7. We got the burning platform coming up. Have you seen how this coronavirus is spreading in China?
Oh, man.
500 people are infected. 17 people are dead. When we started talking about it on Monday... There were only four people who were even known to have been diagnosed.
You called the exponential rise in the numbers.
Let's hope it stops soon.
The last I read up on it, there was one American man who was infected, and he was flying from Washington and landed in Asia, and he got it there. So,
well, they've locked down the city of Wuhan. 11 million people live there. You know, you think about how big Joburg is.
Holy smokes.
Compare it to that place. That place is like twice. No, sorry. How many people in Joburg? About 6 million. Somewhere around there. It's about twice the size of Joburg.
11 million people.
Imagine lockdown.
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
How do you lock down 11 million people without like...
We're like just under 1 million people in Johannesburg.
No, it must be.
According to... Like 3 million people alone. Or something like that, don't
it? This is a 2011. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, okay.
No. People have had babies.
So they've locked down the city of Wuhan.
5 million. 5.6 million.
There we go.
From last year.
And they've put controls in place. The US has announced its first case of the coronavirus on Tuesday. It's planning to begin health screening at airports. Oh, that's going to make traveling hell. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has deferred action. A meeting in Geneva declined to declare the Wuhan coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern, but officials will meet again today.
But Gareth, wouldn't you rather being delayed at the airport for extra
I'm not
screening?
I'm not traveling anytime.
As opposed to that.
Now,
11 million.
Let's just again...
Why am I itchy all of a sudden as well?
Let's just look again at what would happen. And none of us want this to happen. Nobody. Nobody wants this thing to spread any further than it has. Thank you. But if it does, you've seen all the apocalyptic movies.
Oh, here we go.
Just imagine an exponential outbreak now. The kind of thing that you wake up tomorrow. Right now, there are 500 people infected. You wake up tomorrow... There's 5,000 people infected. You wake up the next day, it's 5 million people infected. And so on and so on. Until you reach numbers in the billions, and suddenly it looks like half of humanity has this thing, right? Just think about the consequences. Think about how that would immediately stop everyone from talking about the stuff that we think is important right now and bring everything into stark contrast. Suddenly you go from a HD TV with beautiful aerial shots of cities to a black and white TV with 20 pixels on it, and we've got to choose between those 20 pixels.
Oh my God.
Suddenly all the stupid stuff that we thought was important, the Gini coefficient or global warming or any of that stuff, and it is important, all those things are important. But just at that moment, everybody's like, whoa, hold the hell on. Apparently, CNN's team on the ground in Wuhan had to scramble to get out of the city before Chinese authorities implemented a public transport lockdown to contain the spread of the virus.
If I am covering that story, I need at least double my salary.
There was a 3 a.m. rush to leave the city, which is scary. It looks like rush hour at the peak times in the busiest international airports.
Although if I'm the American government, we're going to keep you... Yeah. We don't want you coming home with that noise.
No.
But Gareth, I, being South African and Sia, I don't know if you know H2O...
Are you South African, Bula?
No. But for some people around the world, they might not know that wild waters exist.
No, since I'm trying to think, spends so much time in Davos,
in Boxburg?
We don't know. Yeah.
So I used to do this jaw. We call it a jaw here. And we can barely contain 800 people in wild waters and get them to behave. 11 million. Holy. God.
That is a good point.
Crackpot. That
we
is
insane.
We
can't even get people in Kailami estates to stop knifing each other or having fights with shirts off in the Jesus.
I'm trying to see what the physical effects of this virus are. But for now, I'm just spotting the symptoms. And they're very flu-like. So a runny nose, a cough, a sore throat, possible headache, maybe fever, which can last a couple of days. Those are some of the symptoms.
The Carenza, you say.
And paranoid people all over the world are starting to get... Riet says, and Riet, I'm excited for you. She's moving her youngest daughter into the hostel at Stellenbosch University today, starting her journey to change the world. Just kidding. It's going to be one hell of a party, at least first year. Well, at least you're realistic, Riet, because she is just going to party for the first year. Unless she's one of those serious kids who gets stuck in early and...
Nah.
I mean, I didn't drink in first year. I was boring as hell.
But you went to Dickies, eh?
Yeah, I made up for it afterwards.
No, and you also didn't stay at Res.
Stellies is a different vibe.
No. Stellenbosch, basically people just are drunk all the time. Yeah. It's not quite as drunk as Rhodes.
No.
And nothing's just from Rhodes. Drinking the water, you can be pregnant.
Well, I mean, there isn't water. There's only wine. People open the taps and wine comes out. Stellenbosch.
Just by touching a doorknob.
Yeah, you can good luck, Riet. And make sure she knows about condoms, please. Imagine having another wife, Vinny says. That will be all-out war in a coloured household. The write-up in the newspaper would be something like this. Man dies by high heel to the head after introducing new wife to first wife. Yeah. Some cultures is not going to be working out too well. Stay single, motherfuckers. Yeah. That's what Vinny says.
Stay safe, stay single.
Hey, I was talking to the guys who distribute our newsletter. This is just fascinating to me. Apparently, only 6% of the people who read the Cliff Central newsletter are married. Only 6% of our newsletter audience are married. The rest... 93-odd%, and there's always a margin of error, are single. Does that mean either that we're all so hideous, no one wants to marry us, or we've chosen to be single?
I didn't want to say it because it was going to be, oh, see, you're making this about you, but really I'm thinking, why am I still
single? That doesn't mean if you listen to us that you're guaranteed to be single, but if you are on our newsletter subscription, and maybe you should subscribe if you want to know what's going on over there, go to cliffcentral.com and add our newsletter to your daily dose of what you need every day.
This is like our own personalized and very niched Tinder.
Yeah.
So should the staff members here every single week, there should just be a new profile.
We should just put someone up every week and say, hey, this guy's still single or this girl's still looking for somebody.
Because what, three people here are in relationships? Who work here other than that everyone else is single. I'm so signing myself up.
Clearly it's reflected in the staff as well.
Tomorrow, Cliff Central newsletter.
Maybe we need to do something.
My profile's up there.
Coming up next, the burning platform. Canton Pillay will be with us, and you can suggest anything you'd like us to talk about by sending us a message, a voice note, whatever it is, to 0797482090. Let's go to some Black Sabbath in honor of Ozzy Osbourne, who's been diagnosed with Parkinson's. And for all the Aussie fans, something to wake you up this Thursday.
CliffCentral.com